It's time for the December edition of Midday on Film, a look back at the notable films of the year, what's playing or about to play in the theaters in the Baltimore region, and what to look for through the holiday season. Our critics, Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed, join me in Studio A, and we welcome your thoughts as well. If you're a frequent moviegoer, what was the best film you saw in 2014? Please join us as we get Linda and Chris's thoughts on the current cinema and coming attractions with, of course, a dash of December Oscar buzz. It's Midday on Film with DeLibero and Reed after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. It's time again for Midday on Film. It's the December edition of Midday on Film with our film critics, Linda DeLibero, director of film and video at Johns Hopkins University, and Christopher Llewellyn Reed, who is professor and chair of video and film at Stevenson University. Nice to see you both again.
Good to be here, Dan.
Great to be here as always, Dan.
December means we review films of the year, 2014, look back a little bit, look at the current cinema, and then look ahead a little bit. Is that right? Are we all on the same page with this?
That sounds like a good plan to me.
That's what we'll be doing this hour. So Linda and Chris will treat us to some reviews of films in the current cinema first, and then we'll talk about some coming attractions for the holiday season and what's ahead in January, say, early 2015. And then we'll throw in a little Oscar buzz for you as December sort of calls for that. I want to just tell our listeners, as an added attraction here in this hour of the show, I hope you'll stay with us for the Midday on Film, Hiroya Sukamoto is back, a Japanese guitarist, composer, and singer who's visiting Maryland again. You might remember him from being on Midday last year. Hiroya, nice to see you again.
Thank you for having me
again.
Yeah,
thank you. You're headed to Pikesville tomorrow night for a performance at Guitars of Pikesville on Reisterstown Road. I'll tell people about that. You want to just say hello with your guitar.
All right.
Say hello with your guitar a little bit here. And I asked Hiroya, go ahead and play. I asked him to play a movie tune for us this year, a famous guitar piece from a movie of the late 70s. Am I right? Okay. And he's going to play it for us later, and then we'll have a caller call in and guess what movie this piece is from. Okay? He's good. Hey, we're gonna hear some more of Hiroya as we go along here. So thank you very much. Linda and Chris, let's start with current cinema, okay? Birdman, we're going to start there with this Michael Keaton film that's been out for a month or so now. Who wants to go on Birdman? I heard from Linda a little bit on this earlier. How about you?
Yeah, so I'll start since Linda already reviewed it brilliantly on the air about a month ago.
Yeah, didn't we do that? I thought we did that.
But we both like it so much that we wanted to talk about it again briefly.
Excellent.
So this is a film by Mexican director Alejandro González Iñárritu, who also gave us Amores Perros, 21 Grams, Babel, Beautiful. It's sort of his first comedy, though it's certainly not, I don't want to mislead people in thinking it's a yucca minute movie. It's just a very funny film about success, the loss of it, about celebrity and madness and the intersection of the two. It stars Michael Keaton, who's an actor in the film, known for playing the superhero known as Birdman years ago, so sort of art imitating life, since, of course, Michael Keaton at one point was known for playing the original Tim Burton Batman. And in the film, he's decided to stage an artistic comeback by adapting the short stories of Raymond Carver, the collection What We Think About or What We Talk About When We Talk About Love or Think About When We Think About Love. I can't remember the official title. Talk.
Yeah, I thought talk, you were right think. The second
yeah.
time. Yeah.
Things aren't going that well. He's spending his own money to stage this. He loses one of his lead actors and has to hire a prima donna played by Edward Norton, brilliantly played by Edward Norton. It's a terrific performance by Michael Keaton. It's great to see him back on screen in fine form. There are also great performances by Naomi Watts, Zach Galifianakis, Emma Stone as Michael Keaton's daughter, Andrea Riseborough. It's a really wonderful film, and it's shot to look like a single continuous take, manipulated in post-production to kind of, even though the film takes place over several days, but to look like sort of a single take, the fevered imaginings of this man potentially on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And in the scene that I chose to listen to today, we hear Michael Keaton's Regan, that's his name, talking to his daughter, played by Emma Stone, about how things are going the day before the play is supposed to open on Broadway.
Do you really think you'll be ready for opening tomorrow?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, previews are pretty much a train wreck. We can't seem to get through a performance without a raging fire or a raging heart on. I'm broke. I'm not sleeping, like, you know, at all. And this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature deformed version of myself that just keeps following me around and like hitting me in the balls with a like a tiny little hammer. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Never mind.
Michael Keaton. Yeah. Linda, you really liked this film.
Yes, I did like it very much because it's imaginative, it's thrilling cinema. And it's just listening to that clip struck me how much this is film for grown-ups, and Lord knows we don't have enough of that.
Okay. All right. So you like Birdman. Recommend it to our listeners.
Oh, highly, sure highly. And it is a film getting Oscar buzz as well. So.
Okay. The next one is Dear White People. I've only seen the trailer on this. It looks interesting. We call this satire?
Yes, it's a satire about race relations in America set at a fictional Ivy League college campus. It's a first feature by the writer-director Justin Simien. It had a long gestation on social media and using social fundraising, crowdfunding sites. I forget whether it was Indiegogo or another one, but basically creating buzz about the film long before it was ever released.
That might explain why I thought this film came out last year.
That's right. We've been hearing a lot about it before. I actually didn't like the trailer that much. I thought the jokes in the trailer were rather obvious.
Yeah.
And I surprised myself by liking the movie a lot more than I thought I would, because I think we can't have enough films that talk about race relations in America in intelligent ways. So I'm all for the film's mission, but the trailer just looked like the jokes were going to be ones that perhaps were a little too obvious. But like Spike Lee's 1989 Do the Right Thing, it tackles race relations head-on in a really intelligent way, despite the fact that much of what we see on screen is rather contrived. It just so happens that the dean of students at this college and the president more or less grew up together and both have children of the same age at the college at the same time. So we need to overlook a lot of those contrivances to enjoy the film. But it has a lot of smart humor in it, and the satire sometimes is spot on. The title of the film comes from a radio show on the campus run by Sam, played by Tessa Thompson, who's a biracial young woman who is sort of in denial about her white identity and is focusing in her college career on her black identity. And she has this show called Dear White People, where she takes on a lot of the prejudices that she sees on campus. The film's very funny. And the clip I chose has Tyler James Williams from Everybody Hates Chris. He plays Chris on Everybody Hates Chris, who plays Lionel, this character who fits in nowhere. He's a sci-fi nerd. He's black. He's a sci-fi nerd with a huge afro that kind of turns off a lot of his fellow African-Americans on campus. He's gay. So he really fits in no one particular group. But
does he have a role on the radio show?
No, but here he's sort of being given this imaginary tip test by Sam, restaurant tip test, where she's challenging him, what would you do in this particular situation as a young black man?
The tip test. You hit up Jelly's for a snack. Your waitress mistakes you for someone who looks like you, black, who once ran up a $30 bill and left a $1 tip. You watch all the other customers order before you do.
Pastrami sandwich on rye.
And then proceed to wait no less than 40 minutes for your food. How do you tip? A.
40 minutes? She's lucky if she gets 40 cents. Okay, you do a good job, maybe see a tip.
B.
She was tripping, but 15% is the least I can do.
Or C.
I reject the stereotype that African Americans do not tip. I will leave 25, just to prove that I can.
So you can hear there's you know, it's a smart scene. A lot of the film does work. At one point, there's a huge on-campus party thrown by a white fraternity where all of the whites in at that party show up in blackface, eating fried chicken and watermelon, and that basically prompts an almost race riot. There's some fights that break out when the African-American students show up to sort of break up the party.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What do you think about seeing this film, given what's going on in the country these days? The Garner case, Staten Island, all the conversations that are being had about race?
That's an excellent question. And I think because the film is more smart than not, I would highly recommend seeing it. Again, you just have to overlook some of the sort of perhaps first-time writer-filmmaker contrivances in the character situations. But I think a lot of the humor is spot on. So I would recommend it, particularly in light of what's been going on recently.
A film that opens today, The Homesman. This is a film directed by Tommy Lee Jones and stars Hilary Swank. It sounds really interesting. Chris has a review of it on his website today. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Yes, so it's a film I wanted to like more than I did. I really liked Tommy Lee Jones' first film as a director, The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. Really smart film. This film is a Western set in the 1850s in the Nebraska Territory, and it's about a strong frontier woman, played by Hilary Swank, Mary B. Cuddy is her name, who ends up volunteering to take three women who've lost their minds back east because their husbands no longer know what to do with them. And they've lost their minds for various reasons, partly through abuse from their husbands, partly through tragedies, losing their children, partly through illness. And it's a film that really takes a hard look at male treatment of women, so it's a kind of strong feminist revisionist Western, though I think a better recent revisionist Western was Kelly Reichardt's Meek's Cutoff a few years ago, starring Michelle Williams. It's a messy film. It's a very odd film, but I kind of liked it because of its oddness, the way it sort of will suddenly flash sideways to a dream and we don't know exactly what we're seeing at first. He's taking chances narratively that don't always work.
And he's in the film, too.
He's in the film as this drifter, George Briggs, who's hired by Hilary Swank's Mary B. Cuddy to help her take these women back east. Now, Hilary Swank gives a marvelous performance, but she's both an asset to the film and the film's biggest problem in a way, because she plays a character that is supposed to be plain and bossy, and no man would want her. But she's Hilary Swank playing the role with such energy and vibrance that I found it hard to believe that nobody in this forsaken territory would actually want to marry her. I was always under the impression that frontier people liked strong women who could take care of themselves.
So they're talking about her in a certain way, but the camera's showing you a different person.
That's how I felt watching the film. Yeah. It's still an interesting film, if deeply flawed.
Okay.
And I liked its oddness. Yeah, so in this clip, Mary B. Cuddy has just rescued George Briggs from a hanging. He's in her home, and she's telling him what she's about to do, take these women back east, and asking him to help her.
What's the job?
Three women in this country have lost their minds. Their husbands can't care for them properly. You and I are going to take them back across the river to Iowa.
The Missouri River?
We leave tomorrow.
Hell, that's 5 goddamn weeks from here.
I will not sit still for profanity in my house.
I can see why you're single.
I need someone who can hunt and guide and spell me up the reins and help with the animals on the trip. That's why I set you free. It's your job, and you sworn to do it.
Three crazy women for 5 weeks is a lot more than I bargained for.
If you've lied to me and intend on abandoning your responsibility, then you are a man of low character. More disgusting pig than honorable man.
Thank you for the kind words, sister. You're no prize yourself. You're plain as an old tin pail and you're bossy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I like both these actors, so I'll be a sucker for this one, I think.
They're both very good in it, yeah.
We have to take a break. And at this break, we're going to bring Hiroyo Sukamoto back into the show. So I asked you if you would play, aside from your own compositions, a piece that was in a movie more than 35 years ago. And so Hiroyo is going to play it now as we go into our first break here on Midday in Film. And if you can identify the movie that this piece is from, give us a call, 410-662-8780. I put the phone number out also because our listeners, if you're a frequent moviegoer and there's a couple of movies or one movie that you thought was the best movie from the past year, call us and join our conversation. 410-662-8780. That's Hiroya Tsukamoto playing for us here on Midday on Film, visiting us in Maryland today. He's got a performance tomorrow night in Pikesville, mostly of his own compositions, but I asked him a few days ago, do you know this piece from this movie? Could you work this up since it's a Midday on Film hour? Let's have Hiroya play something from a movie. And then we asked our callers if you could identify it. Maureen is calling in. Let's see if Maureen knows what it is. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. From The Deer Hunter, and it's lovely to hear it played so beautifully.
Oh, that's nice. She said he doesn't have his headset on. She said it's lovely to hear it played so beautifully, Hiroya.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Arigato, right?
Arigato.
All right, Maureen, way to go. That's Cavatina, right? Cavatina from The Deer Hunter. So, and then you want to play one of your own compositions. We'll listen to that in just a minute, okay?
Sure.
So thank you for doing that,
Hiroya.
But an email from Catherine talking about the films of 2014. She says, one of the best films I saw all year was, surprisingly, Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Overall, I thought it was a lackluster year for film, but I like this one.
I think anything Emily Blunt is in is immediately raised above the ordinary. But I like that film a lot. It's interesting. It's been rebranded Live, Die, Repeat by the studios because they didn't do that well at the box office, and they're trying to give it a second life on DVD. And someone
with a new title.
With someone somewhere thought that that was not such a great title.
Linda, we're going to talk again about current cinema, and then we'll be getting to coming attractions and talking maybe some Oscar buzz in the last, I don't know, 40 seconds of the hour. But anyway, the next film we want to talk about that's out there now is The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1. Do you want to set up a clip first, listen to that, and then have Linda talk about it?
Absolutely. So This is the penultimate film. It's yet another trilogy turned into a quadrilogy at the Cineplex. It's Part 3. If you saw the second film, you'll know what's going on. If you haven't, you probably shouldn't be seeing this film. But the rebels have regrouped in District 13. And in this scene, Peeta Mellark, who was presumed dead or tortured or captured at the end of the last film, is suddenly appears on TV on the talk show hosted by the Stanley Tucci talk show host character.
Oh, he's still in it.
He's still in it. Yeah, yeah.
They haven't replaced him.
Everyone who didn't die in the previous film is back for round three.
So Jennifer Lawrence is
there. Right. Jennifer Lawrence is Katniss Everdeen, and Peeta Mellark is played by Josh Hutcherson. And in this scene, Stanley Tucci is going to break out Peeta Mellark, who's over the course of the film increasingly brainwashed to say things to upset the rebels. And here we hear him making his first appearance, and at the end of the clip, we hear Jennifer Lawrence's Katniss reacting to seeing Peeta for the first time on TV.
There has been rampant speculation about what really happened in the Quarter Quill. And here, to shed a little light on the subject for us, is a very special guest. Please welcome Mr. Peeta Mellark. Peeta, a lot of people feel as though they are in the dark.
Yeah, I know how they feel.
Now, so set the stage for us. Talk us through what really happened on that final and controversial night.
Well, first off, you have to understand that when you're in the games, you only get one wish. It's very costly.
You're alive.
Linda, do you like these movies? Do you like Hunger Game films?
No.
You haven't liked them.
They're fine for big blockbuster movies made from big blockbuster best-selling novels. And I get the attraction, and I think they're above the average, and I think they're pretty smart. But they are what they are, and it's particularly ironic with this one, which was this is part one of a two-parter. Basically, they broke that third film in half so that they could make more money off of it. Mm-hmm. And that shows. It's pretty blatantly cynical. And it's, as I say, particularly ironic because one of the most interesting things about this episode is that it is about the cynical manipulation of images and media in the service of propaganda. And so it could have been, I suppose, it's sort of dreaming to think that Hollywood would ever make a movie that would really investigate that issue in an entertaining way. But this one, does have that element in it. It is pretty interesting.
I get that just from the clip, actually.
Sure, yeah. And it kind of does it brilliantly, and yet you're always quite aware that the movie itself has already been co-opted by the entertainment industry, and it is a cynical manipulation of the populace itself. And the other thing that I guess I kind of resent about these films is that it is taking a really breathtaking young actress away from making more interesting films in
Jennifer
Lawrence.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I mean, throw enough money at people, I guess they'll keep making the films, right? Maybe she enjoys it. I don't know.
We could look on the bright
side. That woman is a very talented actress. I just saw it recently again, American Hustle. It was at my brother's house on Thanksgiving. It's really excellent. She is excellent.
We could look on the bright side that she'll make enough money doing this that for the rest of her career, she can make smaller films.
Yeah, okay.
I agree with everything Linda just said. I love that metafictional marketing element. I mean, at one point, there's a promo film called Apropo in the middle of the movie that uses the exact same music and logo as we see in the trailer. So it's sort of the rebels are using materials that we see to market the actual film. And that's very smart. But the film is not only that, and it is dreary at times, and it's just a setup for part four.
Mm. Now, Interstellar, the next film we're going to talk about, a young woman who saw this told me she just found it so arresting and breathtaking, and she went with some of her friends, and they were all speechless at the end of this movie. And I've heard this from a couple of adults, too, maybe not the two adults who are in the studio with me today, Christopher Llewellyn Reed, our film critic, along with Linda DeLibero, our other film critic, and contributor to Midday on Film. So Interstellar, let's talk. We haven't had a chance to talk about this.
No, we haven't. So Christopher Nolan likes these big ideas, and sometimes they work in these big concept films, and sometimes they work less well. I liked Inception, though I thought it had problems, but I really liked that film, and I liked its vivid visual imagination, and I liked the first Batman, and I love Memento, which for me remains his masterpiece. In this film, he reaches figuratively and literally for the stars, but kind of gets stuck in the clouds. He has a lot of ideas that he's kicking around: love, gravity, multiple dimensions, love will conquer all kind of ideas. He cribs a lot from Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, both visually and thematically. For me, the most interesting part of the film is the first hour, which came out of the collaboration of his brother, Jonathan Nolan, who's the co-screenwriter, with Steven Spielberg, when Spielberg was originally set to direct the film before Christopher Nolan took it on. The first hour is set on the planet Earth in the not-so-distant future after some eco-disasters have more or less reduced us to only being able to farm one crop. There's a lot of Dust Bowl visual aesthetic. And the clip I chose is from that first hour when Matthew McConaughey's Cooper, who will eventually fly off into the stars to find a new home for humanity, is talking to administrators at his daughter's school. And we learn a lot about what's happened to humans in this clip and their lack of an ability to imagine a life outside of their dreary current existence.
Murph is a great kid. She's really bright, but she's been having a little trouble lately. She brought this in to show the other students the section on the lunar landings.
Yeah, it's one of my old textbooks. She always loved the pictures.
It's an old federal textbook. We've replaced them with the corrected versions.
Corrected?
Explaining how the Apollo missions were fake to bankrupt the Soviet Union.
You don't believe we went to the moon?
I believe it was a brilliant piece of propaganda that the Soviets bankrupted themselves, pouring resources into rockets and other useless machines.
Useless machines.
And if we don't want a repeat of the excess and wastefulness of the 20th century, then we need to teach our kids about this planet, not tales of leaving it.
You know, one of those useless machines they used to make was called an MRI. And if we had any of those left, the doctors would have been able to find the cyst in my wife's brain before she died instead of afterwards. And then she'd have been the one sitting there listening to this instead of me, which had been a good thing because she was always the calmer one.
Are we listening to the True Detective? What is this? I'm sorry. It's Matthew McConaughey. Does he do that in all of his acting now?
Well, that's a big problem for
me with the film. Go ahead.
I found him horribly miscast and kind of unbearable in this role as the concerned, loving father. Come on. I mean, he's a stripper in Magic Mike. That's great. but no, not here. And I have to say, for me, this film, in its recalling of 2001 and Tarkovsky's Solaris, really kind of went the wrong way for me, was an unfortunate reminder of the greatness of those two great movies and the failures of this, one of which I thought was simply, what is going on?
Mm-hmm. I don't like that feeling. It sounds, from what Chris was saying, that he's tried to reach too far. There's too many themes that he's trying to grasp.
Made me sleepy.
Really? Yeah, what about cinematically? I mean, how does it compare to a film like Gravity, for instance? What would you say about that?
Well, the problem is that it's so scattered that there is never any sort of one particular set piece that looks like enough time was spent on it to make it believable, even in terms of the film. We have this wonderful visual of a black hole around which some planets are orbiting, and it was beautiful, but if you thought about it too much, it stopped making even visual sense.
There were just so many moments in the film where I was saying, "What? Why is that happening? Wait a minute. Why that spaceship is turning around this thing for what reason?" And and there were moments when Hans Zimmer's soundtrack actually overwhelmed the soundtrack, so you couldn't hear what people were saying. So you're sort of in this state of confusion.
I like Hans Zimmer's music, so maybe I'll enjoy this film.
And Christopher Nolan has said that was intentional, that he wanted the sound. Let me just speak up, though, for Matthew McConaughey, because he did not annoy me in this film, and I like both him and Anne.
He didn't bother you much.
No, and that's not all his performance. And Anne Hathaway, who I don't always like, I actually found myself strangely enjoying very much in this film. I did not, however, like either Jessica Chastain or Michael Caine, both of whom I thought were miscast.
Anne Hathaway doesn't break into song in this.
She does not. Okay, good. But I really enjoyed her performance, and I actually really enjoyed Matthew McConaughey. And I like the first hour of the movie very much.
If you want to see it, you should see it on a big screen.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Right. And he shot it in 70mm, and you can see it projected in 70mm on some screens. So.
The next film we're going to talk about is St. Vincent with Bill Murray. But before we do, can we hear some more Hiroya? Hiroya, can you play another song for us?
Sure.
Since he's visiting us again, providing some music accompaniment to Midday on Film today, Hiroya Sukamoto. Go, this is a piece that you wrote?
Yeah, this is called From Coast to Coast.
From Coast to Coast, okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Hiroya Tsukamoto. If you want to see Hiroya in concert tomorrow night, let's see, 7 p.m., Guitars of Pikesville. In you played there last year, right?
Yes, I did.
Same place.
Mm-hmm.
Hiroya, you live in New York City, correct?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and he just gets his guitar and gets in his car and drives around the country and does these gigs. So tomorrow night, 7 p.m., at Guitars of Pikesville. And that song you just played, Coast to Coast, is on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
I saw that. I listened to it earlier. Yeah, I'm glad you played that one. Hiroya will stay with us for the rest of the hours. We talk about the current cinema and take a look back to the films of the year. We still have to do that. But Linda and Chris, let's talk about this next film, St. Vincent. Bill Murray, I'm a sucker for Bill Murray. So Bill Murray plays a veteran who lives next door to a boy whose parents have gone through a divorce. Do I have that right?
Yes, and it's basically Bill Murray doing Bill Murray, though in a very entertaining way. The role was tailor-made for him. It's the first film by Theodore Melfi, first feature-length film. He wrote and directed it, and he got the script to Bill Murray, who's clearly a part meant for him. And Bill Murray plays this misanthropic character, Vincent, who's hard-drinking, hard-smoking, hates the world, is running out of money. It also has a very subdued Melissa McCarthy and a very funny Naomi Watts, who I don't usually like.
Did you say subdued Melissa McCarthy?
Yes, very subdued.
That ought to be worth the ticket,
indeed.
Maybe.
And right. Naomi Watts, who plays a pregnant Russian prostitute, and I don't usually like roles written for women as prostitutes, but I found her very funny. And a newcomer, the kid, Jaden Lieberher. So basically, Melissa McCarthy, a single mom, moves in next door to Vincent with her kid, finds herself overwhelmed by the demands of her job. And so Vincent is Bill Murray, ends up taking over babysitting duties. And in this clip, we sort of get a sense of how that's going.
Hey! Well, hi, Mom. What are you doing?
Long things long.
Hey, Finn!
I was sleeping. Thanks for that.
All right, let's go. I'm gonna make dinner. You can do homework.
Oh, I already ate.
Stop mowing. You're mowing dirt. Let's go.
He's fed. The homework's checked. I've done my job. I'm taking a break.
Why is he mowing your dirt patch?
Oh, yeah, he's paying me hourly.
I'm showing him how the world works. You work, you get paid, you drink.
Are you drinking alcohol?
I honestly don't remember.
Oh, okay, yeah. Written for Bill Murray. So what's?
I enjoyed the film. It has problems. It's a little formulaic at times, but it's funny. It earns its laughs.
Linda?
I was expecting so little. It's very formulaic, but there are delights to be had in this film, and I think there are some laughs. And Bill Murray, if you enjoy what he does best, you'll find something to like about this movie.
Hiroya, play us into the next break, would you? Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, play anything you like. We're going to take another break here, and we'll come back some more Midday on Film with Christopher Llewellyn Reed and Linda DeLibero and Hiroya Tsukamoto, who's playing some guitar for us during this hour of the show. So a short break, a little more from Hiroya, and then we'll talk about, let's see, Whiplash, The Theory of Everything, Gone Girl, and then we're going to talk about some coming attractions. Hiroya Tsukamoto playing guitar for us in the studio ahead of his performance tomorrow night at Guitars of Pikesville, 7 p.m. at 806 Reisterstown Road. Thank you, Hiroya. Thank you. An email from Mike in Hamden who says, no films knocked my socks off this year, but I have two favorites so far. He says, Ida, beautifully shot in black and white. I remember Chris and Linda mentioning Ida. And Force Majeure. Force Majeure, an intense drama set in a remote ski resort. Also, I'd like to give a shout-out to Cinema Sundays at the Charles, where I get to see these wonderful independent films. And Linda and Chris are frequently there at Cinema Sundays.
And so, I like both of those films, and they both played at Cinema Sundays. Yeah,
right. And I mean, I just note here, I know it might be at other theaters, but film we mentioned, The Homesman with Hilary Swank and Tommy Lee Jones, opens today at the Charles. Okay. So we talked about St. Vincent. Now the theory of everything, seeing a lot of television advertising for this film about Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, it's a biopic or biopic, however one chooses to
pronounce
it.
How do you pronounce it?
I've heard both. A biographical picture.
You don't biopic. Say biopic?
What
do you say, Lyndon?
I used to say biopic.
You say biopic? Yeah.
I used to say biopic, and then I heard people say biopic. So
okay.
Anyway, it's whatever floats your boat.
All right. You can set up a clip for us and review it, please.
Absolutely. So it's a story primarily of the love affair between Stephen Hawking and his first wife, Jane, and how they meet cute at Cambridge in 1963, right before he develops ALS, and then how she, over the course of the next 20, 30 years until their divorce, ends up helping him deal with this debilitating disease and keeping him as hopeful as one can be and alive and active. And it features, for me, two really strong performances by Felicity Jones, whom we saw last year in The Invisible Woman, and Eddie Redmayne, who we've seen in My Week with Marilyn and Pillars of the Earth miniseries. And I think they're both terrific. And I think he especially, as he transforms from a vibrant young man into the sort of the twisted body of a man suffering from ALS. The film has a lot of problems, particularly in its representations of the science and the sort of a coherent chronological series of events in Hawking's life. It gets very confused. But at the center is this powerful love story that really worked for me. And I thought the interactions between Jones and Redmayne believable and beautiful. In this clip that I chose, it's shortly after Redmayne, Hawking has received his diagnosis and he's depressed and doesn't want to see Jane anymore. But she's insisting that he let her in to his life, or continue to let her into his life. And in this scene, we'll hear that interaction.
Leave me now.
Are you going to talk about this or not?
Please, just go.
Is that what you want?
Yes, it is what I want, so please, if you care about me at all, then please just go.
I can't.
I have 2 years to live. I need to work.
I love you.
You've left her, that's a false conclusion.
I want us to be together for as long as we've got, and if that's not very long, well, then that's just how it is. It'll have to do.
But you don't know what's coming. It'll affect everything.
Your glasses are always dirty. There. That's better, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I was first aware of that actor in The Good Shepherd with Matt Damon, Eddie Redmayne.
My first awareness of him was in The Pillars of the Earth, so yeah. that's where I start noticing him.
All right. That sounds pretty strong. Linda, what did you think?
I agree that the performances are wonderful. I think Eddie Redmayne will be nominated and possibly could win an Oscar for this. His transformation is remarkable. I think the film is suffering from too many handicaps and it wants to be about too much. I think it could have been a brilliant, really complicated film about the compromises and the difficulties of marriage in a way that could have been frank and honest, but can't be because it's about Stephen Hawking. And there's a whole other boatload of stuff going on
right.
That cannot be spoken. And it really doesn't, you know, address who this guy was as a phenomenal, earth-shattering scientist. It can't really address him as wholly as a human being who struggles, with this unbelievable illness and really survives it, and also have it be about the wife's take on her sacrifices during this very difficult marriage. And I think that is the big problem with the film.
How would you compare it to A Beautiful Mind? In the way those issues were all handled through that story,
I think it's a little bit less cliched and stereotypical.
I think
this movie does try a little bit harder not to become over sentimentalized, although I think it succumbs to that inevitably. But it's an interesting film, but it's interesting primarily for the subtext that cannot really be overtly explored.
I think it's interesting. It would have been fascinating to see what this director, James Marsh, who's done documentaries like Project NIMH and Man on Wire, would have done with the subject had he made a documentary. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's already been a terrific documentary about Stephen Hawking, A Brief History of Time by Errol Morris. So, you know, he tried something different, and in some ways it's successful, in other ways not.
One of our listeners, Carol, says of this, she liked the movie a lot because it's based on a true story. The performances, especially Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, are terrific. Some of the scenes were so beautiful that they could have been paintings, and it got me to an emotional level, she says. It got to me on an emotional level. Susan says she liked very much the film The Judge with Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. She found that excellent. Can we mention a couple of films here quickly, and then I want to talk about some coming attractions with you. Whiplash. This is about a drummer at a music conservatory, right? You both, I'm seeing thumbs go up all over the studio here. And Hiroya left, so it's just Christopher. Where did Hiroya go? Hey, Christopher,
ironic, because
he's
the musician.
Yeah, this is about a musician, right?
Yes,
you like Whiplash.
Ostensibly.
I love this movie.
Yeah, it's thrilling. It's, you know, I've heard some people complain that it's so stereotypical in the situation of a taskmaster, teacher overbearing, mm-hmm, over his overly willing to please pupil, but it's not really about that. It's about power, and it's so cinematic, and it's so beautifully told. I was on the edge of my seat for the entire time.
Edge of your seat of
and
that film.
This is a movie about a guy who's a drummer.
And at a music conservatory.
And this kid who made the film is about 25 years old.
He's born in 1985, so he's almost 30, 29. Same difference.
Well, you know, to me, once you're under 30, it's all the same.
He's a young filmmaker.
Yeah, very young filmmaker. J.K. Simmons has been getting a lot of Oscar buzz, but I think the more remarkable performance is by the young Miles Teller, who we've seen in several other films where he's shown off his talent as one of the best of his generation. He's the kid.
He's the drummer.
He's the kid. Yeah, we saw him in Spectacular Now and Rabbit Hole. He's a rising star of his generation. Fantastic performance.
See, the most enthusiasm I've seen so far in this hour with the two of you is Whiplash.
Yeah,
I'm just making an observation
here. I have no reservations about the film. It was so much fun.
And it provokes great conversations about pedagogy and about mentorship. Over Thanksgiving, a friend of mine went to see the film while I saw another movie, and afterwards we talked for about an hour on what the film meant. So I think it's a great film to see if you want to have a vibrant conversation afterwards about what we're willing to put up with to be great.
My favorite movie no one is talking about, says Maria, is Pride, an English movie I hope gets nominated for Best Foreign Picture. Based on a true story, funny and poignant, I wish it would get more attention.
I just want to point out, I was on your show about 2 months ago and sang its praises on the air. So I'm a big fan of it.
You did. Another English film we see coming is Mr. Turner.
Yes,
we hope so.
We hope so. Yeah, we don't know when it'll come out.
It's Mike Leigh's biography of the great British painter, and I am very much looking forward to seeing that.
I think that has a mid-December release in the U.S.
Well, I can't wait to see it because
that's what I saw a couple weeks ago.
Mike Leigh for me is hit or miss, but I loved his biopic of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Topsy-Turvy
was
amazing. Right. And let's talk about Gone Girl briefly.
It's doing very well at the box office. It's still in the top 10. It's got some Oscar buzz. We talked about it at the start of October in our Fincher show. It's a strong film. I didn't love everything about it, but it's a worthy contender. We'll see where it goes.
Still going strong.
I've
backed off a little bit from my original estimation of it. And compared to his other films, Zodiac and Social Network in particular, which I think are his masterpieces, I don't think this is quite up to those two films.
Okay, Linda, thank you. That's Gone Girl. Chris, I want to hear from you on Foxcatcher. Wrestlers at the 1988 Olympics.
Yeah, so this film isn't released yet in Baltimore, so I'm not supposed to offer my opinion. I'll just say
this is under coming attractions.
There we go. Features two very strong performances by Channing Tatum especially, as a deeply depressed man, and Mark Ruffalo as his older brother. Steve Carell's been getting a lot of the buzz because it's a showier performance, but I think the really strong performances in the film are those two guys. And I think there are scenes between them in the film that are just so riveting and Mark Ruffalo especially surprised me. I just didn't picture him as a believable wrestler because I've seen him in so many other roles.
This is about two brothers who are wrestlers.
Two brothers
right?
who
and,
end up.
And their money guy, the guy who's sponsoring
them.
Yeah,
John DuPont. It's based on a true story that ended in tragedy in 1995 where John DuPont of the DuPont family ended up sponsoring the U.S. wrestling team. And this film tells a story. It's by the director of Capote and Moneyball.
I remember the DuPont story. Okay, that's what this is.
That is right. So, you know, if people like those other two films, they'll find much to like in this film. And it does feature Steve Carell with a prosthetic nose playing John DuPont. And his is the performance that's getting the most Oscar buzz right now. Though, as I say, I think I wish we were hearing as much about Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo.
Another film we want to hear about and hear Linda's comments on, A Most Violent Year, and the year referred to as 1981, New York City, right?
Yes, New York City. This is J.C. Chandor's new film. He of Margin Call and All Is Lost, the Robert Redford film. This will not be released until January, so I can't say too much about it except that I thought it was amazing.
Okay.
It's something really, I think, to look very much forward to.
Premise, we can give a little bit away. The premise is a businessman who's trying to keep his business together.
During
a time when New York City's having a crush of violent crime.
Yeah, they had a lot of press screenings for the film, I think in part because, you know, they wanted to get it in under the wire for Oscar nominees. And I think Oscar Isaac, who is the star of this film from Inside Llewyn Davis, is extraordinary in the movie.
Chris, you got to see The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies.
I think if one liked the first two Hobbit films, one will probably like this conclusion. It's the briskest and shortest of the three, so I'll leave it at that.
Other films that we want to draw your attention to that are notable, coming up, Annie. There's another musical version, Annie.
Starring Kevontae Wallace.
Okay. American Sniper.
Clint Eastwood's new film starring Bradley Cooper.
Exodus.
Exodus Gods and Kids opens next. Gods and Kings opens next.
Did you say Gods and Kids?
Yeah, I like Gods
it's a Freudian
and kids.
Slip,
yeah,
actually,
Gods
because
and kids?
I don't want to give too much away, but let's just say that there's a small child who plays a large role in the film. So that was probably an unconscious slip there. But that opens next Friday, starring Christian Bale.
Okay. The Imitation Game?
I haven't seen it. It's about, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch plays Alan Turing. Looks like it could be interesting.
Yes, Codebreaker.
Inherent Vice.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Oh,
It's P.T. Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Josh Brolin. Looks amazing from the trailer.
I saw the trailer.
Based on Thomas Pynchon's 2009 book.
Yeah. And Selma Unbroken.
Yeah, that's about Selma.
Selma's interesting, and Unbroken is by Angelina Jolie, based on the Laura Hillenbrand book. So,
what would be your guess in the time remaining here for Best Picture of 2014? I mean, for Oscar, what would be your guess?
Well, the buzz is going to films like Boyhood and Birdman, and even The Imitation Game is getting some buzz. Unbroken. Even Gone Girl, Whiplash. I think of those films, I would be happy with Boyhood or Whiplash.
I think you're right. I think Boyhood has a big... I think that's the front runner.
Huh.
Maybe I'm being a little too optimistic, but I think it'll be up there. Yeah.
You know, I was forgetting about that. That was 2014.
Yeah, Boyhood. Doesn't seem possible, does it?
Thank you very much. Chris and Linda, thanks again for doing this for us. The December edition of Midday on Film, we're finished here. Christopher Llewellyn Reed, I wish you happy holidays, and same to you, Linda DeLibro.
Thanks, same to you, Dan. Happy holidays.
Yeah, thanks
happy
for doing
holidays,
this show
everybody.
With us. Yeah. And we'll listen to some more of Hiroyo Sugimoto, and he's at Guitars of Pikesville tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and he's going to play us out through the hour. Go ahead, Hiroyo. Thank you again for doing this. Arigato.
Today's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richman, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineers are Matt Taka and Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at wypr.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.